This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to be talking about a subject that is difficult for me to talk about, but I want to. I think it's very important. We're going to talk about grief today. And I want to share a little bit with you about my own personal story, and I want to help you really understand some of the complications about grief and give you some good information and some encouragement and maybe some coping skills, and also learn when you need help or when somebody you love and care about might need help with their grief. So the reason grief is difficult for me to talk about is I lost my husband of 39 years, almost 4 years ago now. And every once in a while, I can't believe that it's been almost 4 years. It feels like yesterday sometimes, and then sometimes it feels like forever. So I'm going to speak to you from a personal experience with profound loss, but I'm also going to talk to you about typical grief or acute grief, grief that happens to anyone that has lost something. So occasionally I might add in there some of my experience with the profound loss of my husband. He had a terminal brain disease called behavioral variant frontal temporal degeneration, and he was ill for many years, but we knew he was ill for at least 8 years before he died, pretty severely ill. And then the last 4 years were pretty horrendous, and the last year was beyond explanation to somebody who wasn't going through it. It was extremely difficult. And then Rich died with an incredibly brave and beautiful death with dignity, where he consciously and graciously terminated his own life, which is a topic for a whole nother show. But you can see from a little bit of that story that the grief was very profound. Okay, so let's talk about grief that everyone experiences when they experience a loss. Like many things that I talk about, grief can be thought of as kind of on a spectrum, from a little bit of grief to profound loss that really takes you out and makes you reevaluate absolutely everything that you hold dear. So normal grief or typical grief, what we also would call acute grief, is what happens when you've suffered a loss. All right, and it doesn't matter what that loss is. You might have lost your grandparent who is elderly, and you're expecting the loss, and it still hits you very hard. This might be your special dog or your cat, a pet that you have that filled a huge void in your life, and then when that pet is lost, you're really rattling around trying to fill that space. So I'm not going to define who you lost. I want you to define whether this was kind of a typical grief response, or is it profound and really taking you out. And as we go on with this show today, I want to give you the tools to know the difference between the two. Let's look at the idea of the word acute and the word chronic. Acute means right now. An illness, like you get a fever, you have the flu, we would call that an acute illness because you are pretty ill and it's right now. Chronic means that something goes on and it's sticking with you. So grief that is acute is something that's happening right now and you're moving through it and you're working on it. And a chronic, complicated grief reaction is something that needs help in a different way. So What is the grief that happens to people? Why do we grieve? Grief is about losing somebody that fills a space in your life. And in my experience in my 34 years of private practice, is that the people I have seen who lose someone who is a huge part of their life tend to have a deeper and stronger grief response. Let me give you an example. If you have a parent that you're close to, let's say you're an adult and you have a parent that you're close to, they fill a really important spot in your life, you have a lot of family events, you're close to that person. Like I was really close to my mom. I would say she was one of my best friends before she died a couple years ago now, and she was 90, but it was before that when she was younger and we did a lot of stuff together. That was really important to me. So it isn't about whether you lose a parent when you're a child. That's an even more complicated thing. If that person fills a deep place in your life and you lose them, it leaves a huge gap. My husband, Rich, was a very important part of my life for 39 years. We had children and grandkids, and we were a very close-knit family. So the loss of him from our family left a profound hole. So in my practice, what I find is that the more important and more involved a person is in your life, the bigger the loss and the harder the grief. And so you can see if somebody has a very important pet that is just everything to them and that pet dies, it can be an extreme loss for them. So it's important for us all not to try to judge whether something was profound enough for someone else. So in grief, we want to make sure that we recognize that there's a normal grief response. Everybody grieves when they lose somebody. And grief is a profound longing, a yearning for the person or the thing that filled your life. And you are trying to restructure your life around that hole that's been created. So it helps to understand that normal grief and loss is something that everybody goes through, and we want people to go through that. If you ever see somebody that's kind of blowing something off and going, I'm fine, I worry more about that person than the one who is crying and having a tough time. So healing from any kind of wound takes time. It takes attention. And it can become complicated when that wound festers, when it isn't healing, when you cover it over and pretend that there's not a deep underlying problem happening. So we need to pay attention to grief. We need to allow it to be expressed, and we need to understand that it's normal. So when do we need professional intervention when there's grieving? Because we don't want to pathologicalize normal grief. We don't want it to be made to be an illness or to be you're sick for some reason. Normal grief is something that happens, and we don't want to make it into something that needs professional intervention if it doesn't. But you need to understand when normal grief needs intervention. That's really important. You also need to know when you're dealing with friends and family who are grieving, what can you do to help, and how can you be keeping an eye out for whether they need professional intervention or not. We're going to talk about complicated bereavement and when that happens, but I want you to understand some normal reactions to acute grief, to grief that is happening for a loss that is just very normal. So it depends on the closeness of the relationship. It also depends on the suddenness of the death. Anticipation of death makes grief easier to bear because you're not taken by surprise. Suddenness of death complicates things. Suddenness by violence or by disaster, national disaster, or by somebody just dying suddenly. It takes you by surprise. And let me give you a reason why that can happen. Like, I knew that Rich was very sick and that he was going to die, and we prepared for that. A good friend of mine lost her husband, got up one morning, and he just fell over and died. And she was not prepared. He wasn't prepared, and it was a very sudden loss. So we're going to go to break in a moment, but when we come back, I want to talk about the difference between normal reactions to grief and complicated bereavement so that you can begin to learn the difference between the two. So we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in a minute. Thank you.
Celebrating 20 years in business, Five Star Bank is a community business bank serving small to medium-sized businesses and is a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Five Star Bank was founded in 1999 by a group of local entrepreneurs who wanted to create personalized banking services inspired by shared vision and goals. Today, Five Star Bank is among the top 5% of performing banks in the nation for banks of its size. Five Star Bank proudly serves farmers, ranchers, and growers in the agricultural community, commercial real estate developers and construction, those who lead nonprofits, profits and churches, and entrepreneurs in emerging technology. Five Star Bank is also committed to small businesses through a robust SBA department. They understand that when it comes to business, timing is critical. Their sense of urgency and speed to serve are part of the foundation of their success. Visit fivestarbank.com and visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. United States Marine Corps is celebrating its 244th birthday, Sunday, November 10th at the Wind River Casino and Resort. All are invited to attend this year's ceremony, which includes dinner and dancing, and enjoy the traditional ceremony, including presentation of the birthday cake, honoring the oldest and youngest Marine, missing in action remembrance, the pipes and drums, and music to dance to. Contact Mike Gutierrez at 530-524-7595 for invitations and more information. The 244th United States Marine Corps birthday. Hoorah!
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and we're talking about grief today. And I want to help everyone understand the difference between a normal grief reaction, a typical grief reaction, and a complicated grief reaction. So what's a normal feeling to feel when you're grieving? You might have trouble sleeping or eating, sadness and crying, feelings of emptiness. Little things can trigger you. I remember a client told me once she went to the grocery store and she reached up and she grabbed his cereal and put it in her basket, and then she just fell to her knees sobbing in the middle of the grocery store because she didn't eat that cereal. That was his cereal. And then she made herself put the box back, and it was just a very difficult moment. So little things can trigger you. A movie, a song, a sunrise. Anything. I'll tell you something that people don't expect, and that is after somebody dies and you do the laundry for the first time and you find their dirty clothes in the laundry and you wash them and you fold them, and there's a profound awareness that it'll be the last time their clothes are in the laundry. And nobody tells you to expect that. It just hits you and it's horrible. And then there's all the little things of putting stuff away that's theirs. When do you clean out the closet? How do you bring yourself to donate their stuff or things like that? So these are all really typical grief reactions. There's also a deep longing for the person. There's a thing called separation anxiety. And you might have experienced the first time you left your kids at daycare, or you left them with to go on vacation and you didn't take them with you, or it might have been that you're off on a business trip and you're profoundly missing your spouse. But separation anxiety is what happens when there's kind of a tearing away of somebody from our heart. And it's a very real experience. It feels horrible. And what you don't recognize is the emptiness and the loss creates a separation anxiety. There is a comfort and their energy being attached to yours. And when someone dies, it feels like it's ripped away from you. And you literally feel the gnashing and tearing of flesh, almost, of the separation from you and the longing for that person. After Rich died, I used to say, I just want to talk to him for 5 minutes. I just want to talk to him. In fact, I used to get really mad sometimes, and I'd say, you know, with all our technology, there should be cell phones in heaven. This really sucks. I just want to talk to him for 5 minutes. And it was because I wanted to ease that intense need to see the person or talk to them or know that they're okay, or ease that intense anxiety that goes on inside of you. So those are all normal responses. When you feel that separation anxiety, talk to the person. Know that you can connect with them in your own heart, in your own mind, and that can ease your separation anxiety a little bit. So that longing, that loss, is all about trying to find a new normal. And that's what happens, because family and friends kind of will picture that you're going to get back to who you were, or get back to yourself, or recover, or be done grieving. And I can tell you right now, none of that ever really happens. You create a new normal that doesn't include that significant space, and you learn to go forward, but the grief stays there. It just gets less acute, and it doesn't hurt as consistently all the time. But you move forward, and you do begin to smile again at some point, and you do begin to see a sunrise without it triggering a loss. There are things that begin to happen, but it's a new normal. And the loss of that person will always be part of your heart. So I'm not saying that in normal grief you get over it. I would never say that to anyone. It just is not true of what happens. You will learn to breathe again, is what I'm telling you. And so that's acute grief. That's normal grief. And how long does that take? It takes as long as it takes. We never know exactly how long somebody's going to grieve or being in that intense kind of place. So when do you know if normal grief is moving into something that needs help? There's this thing that's called complicated bereavement, and we also call it complicated grief. And this is what happens in about 10% of the people who are grieving. And that's a statistic, so take it for what it's worth. But it tends to hit people who have lost loved ones in disaster, in violent death. It happens more with the loss of a child. And it also happens more, complicated bereavement happens more when there are other things going on with the person who's grieving. For example, if the person already suffers with depression or anxiety, their grief may be complicated. If someone were bipolar or has a illness that they manage or struggle with, a complicated bereavement can ensue after a loss because they're already trying to keep their head above water with something else. For example, I had a client who was going into the early stages of dementia, and her husband died, and she was beside herself with, how am I going to do this illness without him? And so she not only was missing him and the loss of his support, but she was scared to death about where she was going to end up with this dementia that she was going into, and she was still well aware of it. So when you have a family member that already has an existing condition, recognize that they're at a greater risk for a complicated bereavement. So what happens with a complicated bereavement? This is where the not eating, the not sleeping, the constant crying, the inability to function, like they begin to isolate heavily, they often don't want to pull themselves out of bed. They're having trouble finding a new normal, and the sadness and the yearning is so profound that it becomes intrusive and disruptive in their daily routine and their thoughts. Now, this is not really cut and dried, because I'll tell you, I did not go into a complicated bereavement after Rich died, but I looked pretty pretty over the top for the first 6 or 7 months after he died. I was a mess, and I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to see anybody. I had trouble eating and sleeping, and I was desperately trying to find a new normal in the midst of this intense, incredible yearning and longing. And if somebody had ever stopped and watched the way I was grieving, they probably would have wanted to drag me to the hospital. But I would tell you now, almost 4 years later, looking back, that I was allowing myself to immerse myself in the grief and the loss and the yearning and the longing. And I would hold the grief like holding a blanket, and I'd rock on the floor and scream and cry, and sometimes I'd scream into the carpet, just scream and scream and scream into the carpet. And if anybody had walked in, I would have looked really Looney Tunes, but I was just feeling the pain so incredibly hard that it had to come out. And I would say I was smart enough, I was aware enough to allow the grief to come out. So that helped me not prolong it and keep it going and going and going, because I really allowed myself to feel it. In a complicated bereavement, I often see people who are desperately trying to shove it under and not feel it, or it's leaking out so much and so in such a huge manner that they can't fix it, they can't control it, and they can't function with it. When that is happening, it really helps to get someone into some therapy. It also helps to talk to your medical doctor about it. In fact, even in an acute grief, I really like people to deal with their medical doctor, because sometimes the very short-term use of a benzodiazepine like Xanax or something like that, that can help you sleep, help you keep from going over the top with hysteria in that first few days, that first week, is a good thing. But I do not like the long-term use of anti-anxiety medication for stifling a grief response. I think it complicates it, and it sends you into a complicated grief reaction more than if you allow yourself to feel it. So working with your medical doctor is really good, but recognizing that you have to step into it and feel the feelings. Now, some people think that a complicated bereavement is like post-traumatic stress disorder, but there's a difference between PTSD and complicated grief. PTSD, the main emotion that people feel is fear. It's hypervigilance, it's fear of it happening to them again, fear of being unsafe. The main emotions of complicated grief are sadness and yearning, and sadness and yearning to a degree that you just simply are starting to have trouble functioning. Both PTSD and complicated bereavement have intrusive and disruptive thoughts. Both can have suicidal ideology, but the suicidal thoughts are often different. The suicidal thoughts that I see people have when they're in a complicated bereavement are kind of ruminating about wanting to join the person that passed over. And that's different than, I can't handle these difficult feelings and I want to leave. So when someone is in a complicated bereavement or PTSD, but when they're in difficult emotional states, it's okay to say, are you feeling suicidal? Have you considered suicide? Asking someone if they're suicidal is not going to make them suicidal. So those are some of the things that can happen in a complicated bereavement. And you really need to understand that there is help for this, and you can begin to get somebody out of that. All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you more about coping skills for regular, typical grief and for complicated bereavement, and begin to move us in a direction of helping people recover. All right, we'll be back in a minute.
I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $5. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Orchard Nutrition Center presents the Healthy Living Expo, November 2nd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Red Lion Hotel. There'll be free samples, information, and education all dedicated to your health, and it's free admission. Come check out the dozens and dozens of booths, plus free educational talks in the Sundial Room with expert guest speakers all dedicated to your health. So make plans to bring your family to the Healthy Living Expo, November 2nd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Red Lion Hotel. Brought to you by Orchard Nutrition Center.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and we are talking about grief. We're talking about typical grief and complicated bereavement. And I want to address something that's really important, and that is the difference that happens in grief when there's an expected loss and when there's an unexpected loss. And I want to give you an example. When we knew that my husband Rich was dying of his terminal brain disease, and he had decided several years before he died, before he did his death with dignity, that he was not going to go out one brain cell at a time. He wasn't going to die that way. The end of life for frontal temporal degeneration, behavioral variant type, is extremely difficult, and he knew all that. And so he very carefully, cautiously, and intensely and completely planned his death with dignity. And so the loss of him was expected. We knew that this illness was going to take him out, even if he rode that FTD train to the end of the line. And he prepared all of us that he was going to do a death with dignity when he could no longer, just before he could no longer do it by himself. So that expected loss created some things that were kind of interesting. And now, 4 years out, I laugh about them sometimes. Like, for example, he demanded that I get my concealed carry permit so I'd be trained in a weapon. He demanded that I take an advanced tactical class in handling that gun. He made sure that the security cameras in the home were updated. He said, you need to go sell your car because my car is 12 years old. And he said, I'm not dying with you driving that older car. You need a new car. And then he refused to go with me to buy the car. And he said, I'm not even going to ever ride in that thing. It's not my car. It's yours. Go buy it. You have to go do it by yourself. And I was capable of doing it by myself because I'm financially savvy. But that was the first time in 39 years I'd ever gone to do something that important and that huge by myself without us choosing it together. So those were Rich's ways of making sure that I was safe and that this loss was expected and handled. We had all our legal papers in line. We talked to attorneys. The loss was very expected. And that allowed me to be prepared so that when he did die, I was already doing everything. Now, let's look at what an unexpected loss happens. A dear friend of mine, just a few weeks ago now, I'm going on about 8 weeks, her husband got up one morning and went downstairs, and then she said, oh, I think he left for work without saying goodbye. She went downstairs and found him, and he had just died. And it was so unexpected. And he was getting ready to retire in a few months, and they were planning trips and, you know, getting excited about retirement. And so now she is reeling because there were things he did that she didn't do. There are things around the house, things with bills, passwords to computers, all sorts of really important information that now she's scrambling on top of the intense yearning and the loss. She's trying to do the paperwork things, all those detailed things, and it's exhausting. And so she is meeting herself coming and going. My heart goes out to her, and I'm doing the best as a friend to be supportive. But what happens with grief and loss is nobody else can do it for you. Somebody can't hold you up, and you're going to feel it. Even if somebody calls and says, I love you, or I'm thinking about you, or let's go to lunch. That was always hard. You're still feeling it. Nobody can stop you from feeling it. So what can you do for somebody who's really grieving? You can call up and say, I'm thinking about you. I would really avoid all the trite little phrases. I really got tired of people saying, I'm sorry for your loss. And on one hand, I totally understood that they didn't know what else to say, and I always said thank you. But inside I was going, ugh, that phrase becomes so hollow. What I try to do with friends and family and people that I love that are grieving and clients, is I say, you must be hurting terribly. And they say, yeah. And I say, I'm just sorry that you're hurting so badly, and grief is so hard, and it really sucks. And sometimes that honesty is what lets them feel like you understand the most. Offering to help them get out is something you can do, but they often don't want to or have the energy to do that. Showing up with food, but not a big, huge casserole when they're there alone. Showing up with soup or spaghetti sauce and frozen flat in serving sizes that would be like for two. They can have that and have lunch the next day. Those are things they can reach in the freezer and get out. But try not to tell them that you know how it feels, or telling them how to recover or what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. Yelling at them that they're being selfish or lost in their own grief when they should be thinking of the other people who've also lost the same person, that doesn't help either. So just listening, deeply listening, even saying, I have not experienced what you've experienced, but I'm hearing how deep your pain is. Please talk to me. Allowing them to tell the story of the loss over and over and over again can be helpful, and allowing them to just tell stories about the person is really pretty neat. If you're writing a card to somebody who's grieving, sharing a memory about that person, I'll always remember the time that so-and-so did this, or he touched our life like this, or something like that, is comforting to the person who's lost him. It's comforting to know that the person you love goes on in the hearts and minds of other people. So when your grief turns into a complicated bereavement, why do you go to therapy? What I try to do for people that come in grieving is I say, tell me what your grief is like. How has this journey been for you? What are you doing that's okay? What are the things you're doing that are not healthy? And I try to make that not judgmental or not stigmatized. For example, people will really minimize how much they've been drinking. I have a drink at night and that calms me down. What I try to make it safe for them to do is tell me exactly how much they've been drinking. You know, people will say they drink one or two glasses of wine, and what they really mean is the whole bottle. Or they can't help it because they're just trying to numb their feelings. So I try to give them a safe place to talk about the things they're doing that feel healthy and the things they're doing that they know aren't healthy or that are taking them under. I always want to assess whether they're eating or sleeping. what happens when they get into a crying jag? How do they stop? Do they allow themselves to cry? What are they doing when they're yearning and having separation anxiety? And I'm letting them know that all of these things are really normal, that this is how everybody grieves, and they have different symptoms to one degree or another, but it's normal to feel all this separation anxiety and this yearning. So I'm trying to normalize what they're feeling, and I'm also trying to assess whether they're functioning. That's what we're looking for. Are you functioning? Now, you might not be functioning well, but can you make yourself get out of bed? Can you make yourself eat a little bit? If you're that friend who they'll let in a little bit, one of the things you can say is, are you eating? I had a friend that would talk to me and say, are you eating? And I'd say, yeah. And then he'd say, well, when was the last time you ate? I usually couldn't remember. And so while he was on the phone with me, he'd say, I want you to go make a piece of peanut butter toast, even half a piece, and then eat it right now while you're talking to me. And I would do that because I knew that it made sense, and I just kind of needed that push. So he didn't do it judgmentally, and he didn't laugh at me. He just was assessing, and I was trying to be honest because I knew that he was helping. So the little things like that that pushed me in the right direction were helpful. You can call the person who's grieving and say, I'd like to take you out to lunch. And they'll probably say, oh, God, I don't know, because they don't want to get dressed. They don't want to go out. They don't want to see other people. So you saying, how about if I pick up lunch and bring it over? And we don't even have to talk. We can just sit there. Or you can talk to me if you need, or maybe there's some chores I can help you with, or maybe some things I can fix or reach or whatever. Maybe I can take the car and put gas in it. You know, some things that they're having trouble getting out to do. So when you go to therapy, what your therapist is going to do is be assessing for that functioning. Your therapist is also going to be helping normalize this grief response and letting you know when it's going beyond what it should and when it isn't. They can also help you check in with your medical doctor and get some teamwork going to assist you. All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, I'm going to give you some very specific things to do to help you through this grief.
This is Carl in the Bot, and there is only one place you will find a new Sleep Number dual temp layer bed. That's right, Sleep Number in Reading. Be sure to go in and see them in a Target shopping center next to the Vitamin Shop. My Sleep Number is 40, and I feel great.
Right now they're making room, so go in and receive huge savings on all Sleep Number memory foam and I-Series bed sets. My Sleep Number is 55. Go find yours today. Sleep Number in the Target Center next to the Vitamin Shop.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Signs, signs, signs. That's right, Wonderland Signs has your signs. Big signs, we do them. Vehicle wraps, we do them. If it's a sign, we do them. Vinyl, paint, 3D murals, big, little, inside, outside, every sign you could want.
Sorry, Bob, could we sign a monster truck for you? Could you do that again?
When you need sign work, Wonderland Signs is the one. Featuring the highest quality materials, the longest warranties in the area, all at competitive prices. Wonderland Signs quality can't and won't be beat. From vinyl architectural to banners to magnetics, from 3D to vehicle wraps to sandblasted to murals. If it's a visual message you want to send, we can deliver. Plus, being that we are fully licensed, bonded, insured contractors, we can install them and other sign shops can't. We even offer financing on many sign types. Check us out online at WonderlandSigns.com or come by the shop on South Market and meet the Wonderland Signs staff.
Mention this ad and get 50% off any pair of magnetic signs.
Wonderland Signs, now celebrating 33 years in business in the North State with amazing attention to detail and quality service. Wonderland Signs.
Celebrating 20 years in business, Five Star Bank is a community business bank serving small to medium-sized businesses and is a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Five Star Bank was founded in 1999 by a group of local entrepreneurs who wanted to create personalized banking services inspired by shared vision and goals. Today, Five Star Bank is among the top 5% of performing banks in the nation for banks of its size. Five Star Bank proudly serves farmers, ranchers, and growers in the agricultural community, commercial real estate developers and construction, those who lead nonprofits and churches, and entrepreneurs in emerging technology. Five Star Bank is also committed to small businesses through a robust SBA department. They understand that when it comes to business, timing is critical. Their sense of urgency and speed to serve are part of the foundation of their success. Visit fivestarbank.com and visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. You are listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. And the track that you're listening to is called Alone. And it's just kind of a profound track for this. It makes me want to cry. Okay, wait, I can do this. Sorry. This is from the CD, The Journey, and it's a beautiful CD that Randy did, and we want to thank him for allowing us to use his beautiful Native American music on our show, Therapy in a Nutshell. Therapy in a Nutshell. You can go to randymcginnis.com and listen to his music. It's beautiful. Oh, it'll make you cry. Sorry. Okay, so we're going to talk about what you can do for help. When you're grieving, whether it's a profound loss or whether it's a simple, less complicated loss, know that you need to allow yourself to feel, because the healing happens in the feeling. It does not happen when you avoid it, shove it under, and pretend like it's not there. So there's some things you can do for yourself. One of them is you can journal. You can just start writing. And when I have people do journaling, I tell them to barf it out on the page. Don't worry about grammar, spelling, whether you're making sense, whether you're being fair, whether you're being profane and using bad language. Just barf it out onto the page and just start writing. The catharsis that happens when you do that is profound. The other thing is you can do art. You can just draw. And that is really awesome too. You can just do things that allow the expression to come out of you. And you don't have to be an artist. This isn't about whether you can draw a picture that looks good. This is about, can you slash a color that speaks to you all over a page? Can you let the anger out? Can you let the tears out? Can you dissolve into emotion in the middle of that piece of art? And that is healing as well. The other thing I often have people do when they're grieving is write a letter to the person who's passed, especially when this has been complicated, because grief is complicated when your relationship is complicated. For example, if you had a parent that you always wanted to be close to, but they were not a good parent, or it was bad, or they hurt you in some way, when that person dies, there is a loss of hope that that relation could ever have been repaired. And so the grief becomes strange. I mean, you're relieved sometimes that they're gone, but the hope is dashed that it could ever be a relationship that was repaired. And that in itself creates difficulty. So writing a letter to that person about what they were to you, what they weren't to you, what you wish they were to you. And then I like to have people ceremoniously burn the letter. Sometimes they go to the gravesite and ceremoniously burn it there. And sometimes I just have them go in the backyard and do it in a safe way. You know, don't light a fire. But burn it and offer it up to God. Offer it to the person who's passed over and say, "This, I'm letting this go. I'm sending this to you." That can be extremely healing. Another thing that I really love people to go to, no matter how profound their grief is, whether it's just a normal grief reaction or a complicated grief reaction, is almost every hospice in a town will have grief classes. Here in Reading, Mercy Hospital Hospice has free grief classes every Tuesday from 10 to 11:30. And they're free. And so if you go through their little program, usually it's 4 or 6 weeks, and they will teach you about grief, and they'll teach you what to watch for. They'll teach you how to help your loved one. So that is something that friends or family can do. If you go to someone who's grieving and say, look, I looked into these classes at our local hospice. They're free. You just go and sit there for an hour and a half. You don't have to talk. You just sit there and you listen and you learn about grief. I will take you. I'll go with you. I'll come pick you up. If it's appropriate to go to lunch with them after, great. If they're just, you know, exhausted, take them home. But going with them to do that is sometimes very helpful because they're kind of afraid to go and be vulnerable on their own. The other thing that is extremely helpful that people underestimate is this is one of the beauties of social media. There are grief support groups on social media. I was part of a frontal temporal degeneration caregivers group on Facebook, and I credit that group with really helping me throughout Rich's illness. In the middle of the night when he was up and agitating and I was exhausted, sometimes I'd get on that site and just vent or whine, and somebody would always be on because we are people from all over the world dealing with this, and there are only about 40 of us, but it was really supportive of each other, and I love that, and it helped me not feel so alone, especially when I was isolated with him with a difficult disease. So finding on Facebook, type in grief and loss support or loss of a spouse. There's a site on Facebook called One Fit Widow, and it's about a woman who lost her husband, military husband, and she's very supportive of other widows. And those things can help you not feel so alone, can normalize what you're going through, and offer up a different insight and some coping skills, and that's extremely valuable, and that's free, and you don't have to go anywhere, and you can do it at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep. Okay, another coping skill is reach out to your family doctor or your gynecologist or your whoever, or go to an urgent care walk-in clinic. Talk to them about your grief and your loss and tell them what's going on with you, whether you're sleeping or not, whether you're eating or not. In the acute phase, like I said before, sometimes a benzodiazepine like Xanax or something like that is helpful, but I really only like doctors to give them a few pills, enough for a few days or a week, not a whole prescription of 30, because we don't want somebody being impulsively suicidal, and we also don't want to medicate their loss. It is not helpful to medicate this and shove it under. Now, if a grief goes on to a complicated bereavement, medications such as an antidepressant can be extremely helpful. And what I tell clients that have that kind of complicated bereavement is, look, when the black cloud over your head gets so big that you can't function, taking an antidepressant for a year to help lower that black cloud a little bit, give you a little bit of breathing room, get you stabilized a little bit, and to find your new normal. It doesn't mean you're going to have to be on an antidepressant forever. You can work with your medical doctor about that. You can work on weaning off of it when it's time. But you also don't want to wean off of it too soon. You want to let that stabilize you, get your serotonin levels and or your dopamine levels, whatever's going on in you, get those stabilized, and then wean off of it slowly so that that stays doing well for you. One of the biggest things that helps people grieving is to connect with friends and family in a way that's not too intrusive. Don't demand too much of a grieving person. Don't tell them how to grieve or what to do or drag them out of the house. Offer assistance. Also, show up and help. And I'm talking little things. Show up and sweep their front porch. Plant some flowers out front. Bring over a serving of dinner, not the whole casserole. God, so many people that are grieving say, I've got all this food in the refrigerator and I have to throw it out. Show up with Ziploc baggies and a pen and write on their tuna casserole or grandma's tuna casserole or whatever and put it in servings of about a size for 2 people and freeze them flat in the freezer for them. So those are the things that really help. Come over and empty the dishwasher, do the dishes, vacuum, take the dog to the vet, do something that winterizes the house. Come over and just show up with a ladder and clean the rain gutters. My friend whose husband died, just getting ready to go into winter, and she's back east, and she said, oh, my gosh, he did all the winterizing stuff. He did the things around the house. What am I going to do? And it's scary for her, and it's a void that has been left. So just offering to, saying to a person who's grieving, I can come over and do a few chores for you. Is there something you've been stressing about? I'd be happy to come over and help. Those things are comforting. And then don't make the mistake of offering all kinds of advice on how they should feel or what they should be thinking or how it'd be good for them to get out or whatever. You offer and you show up and you don't push and you don't tell them how to feel. And when you say to them, how are you doing? I'd follow that up with, and I really mean it. I don't want you to tell me fine. What are you struggling with? What can I help with? Those are beautiful things that really help someone you love begin to come through the loss and the grief. So I know this show is not comprehensive on everything there is about grief. It's such a huge topic. But I hope it gave you a little bit of clarity on what is a typical normal grief reaction that you just need to process and feel and find your new normal and learn how to smile again. That will happen. I promise you it will happen if you just keep working it. And if that is not working and you're going under and things are getting worse and it's not coming around, you might be going into a complicated bereavement. Getting some help from your local grief group is awesome. Getting into some therapy and just checking out where you are and getting some coping skills can be so productive. It does not mean you're mentally ill. So from one person who is finding a new normal in life to all of you who are finding your new normal, my heart goes out to you because grief is difficult. It really sucks. And we just need to support each other through the journey. And like every journey that we go through that's difficult, there is purpose for it, often far beyond what we can understand. But this is Dr. Patty helping you learn how to grieve. And Therapy in a Nutshell is a show about helping people survive, helping people heal 1 hour at a time.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.